are listening to The Caregivers with Lon Kiefer.
Hey there, how you doing? Yeah, you. I'm talking to you. You might be a caregiver. Hey, I don't know. You might not even know. Welcome home to the Caregivers Podcast, where you are never alone. My name is Lon Kiefer, and I am a caregiver. And I'm also your host, sometimes known as Doc, the Defender of Caregivers. And for those of you that don't know what we're doing here, we're talking to the caregivers of the world, whether they be professional or personal family caregivers, in an effort to make certain no one is ever alone on their caregiver's journey, even if your companion is just a voice on a podcast. This episode of the podcast is an interesting one because we're going to be talking to a founder and CEO of a senior living, assisted living company. This man and I met probably 7 years ago when he asked me to speak at a conference that he was managing. And I thought I knew his story, but I learned quite a bit more on the podcast. And I learned a very valuable lesson from him along the way. And it's just an interesting conversation to hear about the type of person that would take on the responsibility to grow a country from a company, from the ground up, and a different kind of company. And you know, I've been approached by some CEOs and owners to do the podcast, but I didn't want to do anything that would appear to be a commercial. And I promise you, this does not feel that way. And it was a very interesting conversation that I had with Mike Williams.
Mike Williams, happy Easter morning, and thank you for doing this.
Lon, thanks for having me. Happy Easter to you as well, my friend.
Yeah, it's an interesting Easter in the world. I got a feeling we're gonna get into that a little bit. Mike, I have a saying here at Defender of Caregivers: honor yourself as you care for others. So please, would you honor yourself and what's important to you before you share with others? Tell us whatever you want us to know about you and how to find you, and then we'll get into a really robust conversation.
Well, wonderful. Thank you, Lon, and I appreciate all that you do, and we are here in Blacksburg, Virginia, beautiful New River Valley of Virginia. I grew up right down here in Roanoke, and this morning I'm actually driving back from Abingdon. I had to help the Easter Bunny make a delivery this morning, going back home about an hour and a half here with the family, and luckily these are crazy times, but out of it comes some positives. And I have two of my three daughters that have been quarantined with us, and another, we call her a daughter, actually two of them, who live nearby, who are close family friends. So it's a good time in our home, even though it's not a great time out everywhere else.
Yeah. Well, you and I have known each other, gosh, what, 7 years, maybe six, I don't know. And I've just been impressed with how, and I know it's not easy, but it almost appears to be easy because you juggle so many different balls and you do it well. But one of the balls that you juggle very well is father and husband. I mean, despite all the other things that I see you committed to, I follow you on Facebook, and you have not lost your family because of your commitments. And I, as a man, father to father, I commend you for that.
Thank you, sir. That is important. I've for many years now always thought it's like one of those three-legged stools or four-legged stools on, you know, you got to take care of yourself, and, you know, you're an individual. You're a son or a daughter, you're a father or a mother, you're a friend, and then you're also what you do for a living, and you kind of have to have that spread out so equally, or it doesn't work. So, and I took a pause from my path and got into another industry and where it was hard to do all of that. And, you know, life steers you. And I've always felt if you sit back, life will show you the path of where you're supposed to go. So I've been on both sides of that. I like this side of it a lot.
Wait a minute. All right, now you just threw me a curve. What path could you have been on that challenged you more than the path you're on now, which, by the way, is a, you know, I'll start telling the story because I love about you that I sense a hesitancy to self-promote, but, you know, I know some of your story. You're a second generation, caregiver operator, and you're, a bootstrap guy. I mean, I love the story. I hope we get into it. Feel free to get into it because it's such a unique story. This is definitely not a commercial. It's about a man and his path and what he's helped create. But what path were you on that could have been more arduous than what you're on now?
Well, I like you said, we've known each other for a good amount of time now, and you've seen the progression that we've made over the last many years with our company, English Meadows Senior Living now. But like you said, I'm a second, actually a third generation caregiver, to be honest with you. Growing up outside of Roanoke, Virginia, my grandparents were caregivers in the sense they had they had a working farm and took care of over 30 foster children.
Oh,
and so unfortunately, I was born in 71. I think it was about 72. My grandfather passed away, and so the state came in and told my grandmother, well, we're going to have to take all the foster kids, you know, you're now. And she did that, and then after that, she still wanted to be a caregiver. And my dad, this is actually my mom's mom, my dad at the time was said, you know, they knew another family that was in back then called Home for Adults. And so she and my grandmother and my dad decided to open a home for adults. I ended up for over 20-some years operating this. It was a 22-bed community built on my grandmother's farm land, and there were 22 veterans that they took care of and for a long time. And, you know, that I grew up around that. Those residents, the caregivers there, they were family. You know, we... Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve, all, you know, holidays, they were celebrated there with the residents. There were parties. My dad would throw, and my grandmother would throw parties. Family was there. You know, summers, I ended up moving different places. But in the summers, I was mostly there at my grandmother's, ended up moving back and living back behind there. And, so that community was, you know, ingrained in me, and those people were family. And so, you know, my grandmother passed, my dad had other businesses, and so going into high school and into college, my brother and I, probably we worked every position you could work at a young age. We worked positions now you would get thrown under the bus if you let kids our age do it, but it was a different time back then. There was a, I think I still have the book of regulations. I think it was 7 pages, and now our book's about 178 pages. So we were everything. We did caregiving and cooking and cleaning and maintenance, and you know, did different jobs in high school and college. So when I got out of college, you know, in the late 80s, from the moment I saw the movie Wall Street, I wanted to be a stockbroker. So I immediately ran away from senior living and did that for about 2 years and had a good month and for some crazy reason decided I wanted to be in the restaurant business. And over an 8-year period there, had restaurants. And that's where I was kind of leaning, you know, going back to that point about, you know, your life needs to be balanced. When you're a restaurateur that you're hands-on, that's a hard thing to balance. And learned pretty quickly, everyone should be in the restaurant business one time in their life, or whether working in it or owning one, because it gives you a lot of appreciation for those people that do it. So after a very up and down career in that, and a spectacular a fiery ending to that, I went back into work. I actually took over. That's how we started knowing each other. I started running a state association in Virginia for senior living providers, and I did that because I learned how to run a business and lose a business, and it was a great thing for me to help other people, making sure that they didn't do that. So that was my main thing, getting back into senior living, because I knew that industry, but I was just trying to help others. And some opportunities came along, changing and doing other things, and then that brought me to a point with my good friend and co-founder, English Meadows, back in 2008. That took us to the point that he and I started English Meadows back then.
Well, I did not. I knew some of that, but I did. Now, what irony, you know, you're, I mean, restaurants are, man, I tell you what, I don't know how many or any of them are going to come back from this unchanged.
No,
I mean, there's always opportunity in things like this. I mean, new operators that can come in and maybe take over an inexpensive lease and a business that's ready to go, I'm sure will open restaurants again. But a lot of the existing operators are just going to get crushed in this. What are we, 3-4 weeks into the what are they calling it? Sheltering in place or self quarantining. Anyway, I digress. I did not know that your involvement with Virginia, Long-Term Care Network was that it preceded your English Meadows.
Yes, about 4 years.
Oh wow!
And I just had that calling to go back. You know, when Steve and I went into our Christiansburg campus now. For almost 5 years, that's what we did, and it was, you know, it really met that need for me, from back when I was younger, for that caregiving need. We were in there every day. We knew every resident. We knew every family member. We knew all of the other caregivers in the building, and it was a group effort to provide a home and to care for these individuals. And it's just, you know, as you know, it's such a, whether you're doing that in your home for another person or you're doing it in a community with other people, for a lot of people, it's such a satisfying thing to do, to take care of another human being. And we do that in all different aspects of our lives, but to be able to do that in your work, it really is something that you go home at the end of the day and if you're thinking clearly, you're happy and you're proud of yourself, because that's what you should be. And I know things get kind of mixed up in our lives and our minds and things, and it's tough, and that's been the biggest challenge for me as we grew English Meadows. Is how did I come to grips personally with having a successful growing business, but being more so in an office, a corporate office, than doing what I love to do and what I think everyone loves to do, is to be in that campus or community and working with residents one-on-one 40, 50 hours a week.
Yeah. What we haven't really touched on is how you got into that. I mean, you guys went in and, for lack of a better word, rescued a business model that was failing, and you went in and secured it and, you know, stabilized that environment for not only the folks that lived there, but for the people that worked there and the surrounding community. And you know, before long, you gained a reputation where other opportunities came to you, and you've grown into a. How many beds now do you guys have in your portfolio? I've lost track.
We have 8 campuses across the Commonwealth of Virginia, and we care for right at 500 residents every day, and the number of caregivers that are doing that, that work with us, is right at about 370.
Yeah. And with the exception of, and again, I don't fully know the whole portfolio. We haven't spoken in a while, but you built, or had built in a partnership, I'm not sure of the structure of it, but you, from the ground up, you started at least one community, but most of the others were to go in and turn them around. And I can attest that the way you've done that is just by bootstrapping it with good old fashioned care and compassion. I mean, I know your people. I know the kind of people you hire. I've been in all your campuses, save the one that was built from the ground up. And you know, I know you won't be offended by this, but you have a simple business plan, whereas I see a lot of complex ones out there. And you know, it's working. You're growing, and you're recognized as an operator that will come in and succeed where others have not.
Well, yeah, and I appreciate you recognizing that. With our first campus, there was a national provider who came to us actually twice. They came to us the first time, and we looked at it, and we ended up saying no. And then, like I said, in life, you know, if things are presented to you, and about 6 months later, it was presented again. There was a community, they were going to shut it down. So when we took it over, there were only 32 residents. It was losing probably about $250,000 a year. And Steve and I went in and just started, you know, being in there constantly, treating the you know, everyone in there like family, and starting to bring in anyone and everyone we could to fill it up. And that's really been our model. And like you said, the bootstrapping, that's definitely who Steve and I are. Now, it also causes a lot of headaches and upset stomach, too, especially for people in the office. And so we, you know, a year and a half ago, we brought in some more people who look at those things a little bit more and maybe tell us not to bootstrap as much, which has been a great positive thing. But that's what we did. And so we took over the Elks home in Bedford, which is the longest continuing operating senior living community in the country. It's in its 104th year. So that was another thing. It was losing, and they were looking to shut it down, and we said, no, we can't do that. It's a beautiful place. And the same thing happened elsewhere. Our Abingdon campus, which I just left dropping off things, that was actually one that we took a new building with zero residents, and we learned that was a whole learning experience about taking an empty building and filling it up. So that took a lot over the years, and we learned things there. But the rest of the campuses, you're right, they were situations that it was broken or closing or it was going to have to. And that's what we enjoy the most is, you know, what can we do to fix something and see it? Because I'm a big believer. It's not that the people there couldn't do it. When you're in a situation, somebody can't see it. You know, it's like you can't always recognize standing away from distance can point out something or a few things that are so obvious that there's no way you can see them. And that's what we've kind of done. But you're right, we keep it simple because, as Steve and I have always said, we're not rocket scientists. We're far from it. So if we made it too complicated,
Steve,
he can understand it.
Steve's not anyway. We can both agree on that.
And I tell you what, I consider myself a people person, but he's the people person. Boy, he can sit down with somebody and in five minutes they're telling him things they would never tell anyone else, like they've known him for 20 years.
I said to him, Steve, how is it that you're growing your occupancy in such a competitive marketplace, and they were failing before, and yada yada yada, and what's your secret to success, and what's your business plan, and all that sort of stuff? And he said, I don't know, man. I just talk to people.
Yep. I tell you, and that's what he does, you know, to tell you a story. When we got going, he came down. He was selling his family business, he and his dad, when we had been friends for a long time. So So I said, hey, if you want to get in this industry, you'll love it. It'll suck you in and you won't be able to get out of it, but you'll love it. So he came down and worked for about, trained for about 6 months in a community that I was managing, Holland's Manor down in Roanoke. And, he got into it, but from the get-go, without his approval, all of our marketing, our ads in the paper, our TV, or we didn't do TV until much later, but our radio ads, they all had his personal cell phone number on it. So he became our marketer by default, and he is literally, and if he got somebody called him, he would talk to him for an hour, and his closing rate, I would think, is probably the best in the industry, because they knew he genuinely cared, and they knew, hey, I can call up one of the owners anytime I want. And that's really been one of the secrets to our success is Steve and him talking and caring, just as much, as I do. And, you know, it's just, we're not, you know, fake in any way, shape or form. We care. We don't know everything but we care and I think it actually shows.
Well, it does, and I like your, you know, I like your observation that is true for all of us, but not all of us realize it, that sometimes when you're in the midst of it, you don't see what the challenges are or what the path out is, and, you know, that's the thing that I hope that, you know, when I've gone in as a consultant is that I don't know more than others, I just see it differently than they might see it for themselves. And I make mistakes all the time in my own life, but I have pretty good vision for other people's lives. And you guys, again, it's a compliment. You guys have simplified it, yet you've also listened, when you're given, good direction. And it, you know, the proof is in the pudding. You guys have made several campuses that were otherwise not succeeding successful. And, I'm pleased that I've been able to watch it, and I love the whole story of 2020. Do you want to tell a little bit of that before I ask you a question about current events?
Yeah. So when we started, you know, that's our management company, 2020, and, you know, Steve and I started, and this is back to about life, you know, taking what life gives you, and we actually, you know, talking about the events right now and the economic situation we're in. In 2008, we started 2020, which runs English Meadows, and Steve and I went to the bank for that first Christiansburg property, and my dad was working with us, too, on that, and the bank actually gave us a 120% loan, and so they gave us all the money and plus some working capital, and we did this about a month before the financial crisis. So if we had waited 30 days, it English Meadows never would have happened. But when we were leaving, the bank said, "Hey, you guys got to open two checking accounts, and you got to put some money in it before we fund all this." And I'm like, "Oh." So Steve, we each only had $20 in our pocket, so we each opened our two checking accounts with $20, and that's why we started 2020 Management. Why we called it that, and since then we put a whole lot more money into it, but that's how we started it. And but you know what I was saying about it, and I appreciate what you were saying about us going in and being successful, but we've made a lot of mistakes too, and it's taken people, you know, us, you know, it took a while to realize you've got to let other people and trust other people to come in and see things you can't see, and that's a big asset that you have, and all the experience you have to be able to go in and see a situation and right away see it. And so we've done that before. We've had two campuses, that we've had to, you know, walk away from because we didn't think we had the answers. But overall, we've been successful, and it's very, the most rewarding thing for me, Lon, is when I see a campus, and the caregivers in it, it create a life of their own, where I'm not asking people to do things or saying, it's they're already doing it before I even ask. And they're already, and they become a family, and they start hanging out together personally and celebrating life together. And that's the most rewarding thing for me. The most challenging thing for me, ironically, and I think you'll get this too, is the bigger we've gotten, the more, like I said, I'm not in a campus every day. I'm not with certain residents 40, 50, 60 hours a week. And I truly have missed that and craved that. And that was a big problem for me for years. And then I started realizing, I kind of had an awakening one day, and it was from hearing, actually, some of, when you were generously giving your time and speaking at our conferences to all of our caregivers from around Virginia that would come, that I wasn't, yeah, I wasn't a caregiver for our residents, but I started realizing I became a caregiver for our caregivers. And
absolutely.
That's what I tell everyone in the office is, we don't have the privilege of being around the residents 40, 50, 60. We try to spend as much time in the campuses, and I think we do a great job of it. But we're never going to be able to touch all those 500 people as much as our caregivers do. So our job is to be caregivers for our caregivers, and everything we try to do, and I think we've built an amazing family, an amazing culture, and that's what I'm most proud of. But what we're dealing with right now with this virus has really escalated a lot of the things that we kind of had on the drawing board of, like, let's do this now, let's do this now. And those have been escalated because of these bad times. But it's truly, that's what we feel we are. We're the caregivers for all of our caregivers, which is exactly what you've been, you know, for all of these years and what you've been doing for caregivers. So it's funny how things go full circle and how things progress going forward.
Yeah, you truly do have a family. I mean, you know, and the conference, you know, conference. I mean, I had Kay Francis, who I was going to try and bring to one of your future conferences on the podcast, two or three episodes. She's probably one of the best speakers in general, but in our industry,
mm-hmm.
She's just phenomenal, and she. Very successful from a, you know, financial standpoint because of booking so many engagements, and her entire slate is wiped out for the foreseeable future now. And I don't know what the future of live conferences holds. We'll learn that together. But one of the things that I've always been impressed with is, for what was a small and growing company, you still did that conference, and you did it twice a year. And it seemed like it would be such a distraction from your operations, but you built a family that far exceeded your own company. And I get the caregiver for the caregivers thing because I saw it. I mean, you were a trusted source for people, and you willingly gave your business model to anybody that wanted to implement it.
Well, thank you. And that's, you know what, and it was, we just knew we wanted to keep it going. We did cut it back to once a year because we were so busy. We didn't intentionally do that. We ended up having a hotel that was so booked we couldn't get hotels in Richmond one spring. But for the last year, we've done it once a year. But you're right. It was a whole lot to do because I was making our office staff work double time to do the conferences. But there were two things out of that. It was the people that had been coming for 14 years. Going on 15 years, we're like family. And, you know, we wanted to continue to see them, to support them, to help them out. But also we felt it was a mission to keep it going. And so that's why we want to. This fall will be interesting. I don't know if we'll be able to pull it off, and, you know, it will maybe come up, like you said, with something else. But, that's always been special, and another kind of second generation thing there. My dad helped start the original, which was called Baja, Virginia Adult Home Association, back in 79, I believe. And he was part of that up to the point that I took over as executive director and we switched it to the Virginia Long-Term Care Network. So it's been a long, from 79 to now, I mean, that's quite a while.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the opportunity to have been a part of it. I mean, I think I spoke like 12 different times, and it was always a challenge for me as a humor-based speaker. I want to be able to catch people off guard, and I had to grow as a speaker because there was such a familiarity with your folks that I had to grow beyond the laugh, and I had to constantly come up with new relevant topics, and it was a I think, candidly, I ultimately wore out my welcome with them, but it was a great opportunity to grow as a caregiver, as a professional, and as a speaker.
Well, your programs were always the when we ranked them, that they were the highest ranked. People loved them, and even the humorous ones, they brought out a message, you know?
Yeah.
That resonated in people, and your experience and your philosophies brought a lot. And I know you went and visited a lot of these communities and did work with them, because people told me how much you helped them in their communities. And like I said, bringing outside thought and opinions and a view of their world, it was so beneficial. And that's what I know you do as well now. And I think we helped a lot of people over the years, and you were a big part of that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we can again, thanks for the opportunity. Yeah, enough about me and that. Let's hopefully we can get back to, you know, I think that this opportunity, and that's how I'm going to view it, that we're facing right now, I mean, it's a hell of a challenge, but I think that it's going to put that frontline caregiver on a pedestal where they belong. Those that don't maybe really have it in their bones are self-isolating, for lack of a better term. They're leaving in the face of this challenge, and others are rising up. And I just think that for the angst that was out there, where the industry might be judged harshly from time to time, is going to turn when they see how much people have dedicated and risked to care for the people they're responsible to care for. I think there's a great day coming for us, and I just hope that the small to middle providers are able to survive it. What is going on in the industry now as far as loans and things like that? We hear all the time about, you know, what President Trump is doing with this stimulus package, and these people are getting their checks, but what about the operators? Who's helping them get through this? You're spending more money on staff. You're having to pay overtime, and sometimes you're paying, you know, an inducement to take a shift. You're having to buy far more supplies and pay more for them, and everything else still has to continue. So where does it stand?
Well, I think you're right when you said this is going to elevate caregivers, and we've been saying for a while now, and I said as we were going into this, I really think when we come to the other side of this, it's going to show the importance of what the senior living industry provides and what caregivers in general at home and in communities and what they provide. And we've really had to, like I said, elevate and ramp up some of the improvements. And I think now we really need, as an industry, to look at what we do for our caregivers as far as pay, as far as benefits, and make those adjustments, because they're the ones that are going to get the industry and our residents through this. Not people sitting in offices anywhere, anything like that. The people that are in these communities are going to do it. And, you know, caregivers, nurses, teachers, a lot of these, what used to be predominantly female occupations, have always been underpaid and I think underappreciated. With mothers and stay at home mothers and wives being the most underappreciated, and definitely underpaid. That's been historically the case, but we've got to make sure that everyone is making a living wage. And what that is now, I don't know, but the wages need to be higher. The benefits need to be higher. I don't know how many times over the last 14 years I've worked with caregivers, because, you know, they shouldn't, if their kid has a major surgery or they're in an accident or something, there needs to be health care in place where it doesn't bankrupt them. So many people are bankrupted by health related situations, and they don't have the opportunities. You know, they need to, you know, everyone needs to be given learning and training on things about, you know, even like retirement plans, or, you know, ways to save on prescriptions we try to do all that, and but we're not even doing enough. That's when we realized that what we've escalated, you know, right now because of this virus, we started offering, which we had never done, we've got makeshift daycare centers. And
and
you learn how hard that is when the schools or the daycares stop. We have a lot of, if you took our average caregiver is a 30 to 35 year old single mother, and what she is juggling in her work and home life and raising a child and doing all, like you said, taking, you know, she's not probably taking care of herself, and she's taking care of her child, and she's taking care of these residents. You know, there's so many things we need to do for them. And Greg Mayfit, our head of director of culture that we created a few years ago, which has been a wonderful addition. I said something to him a while back that I wrote on a sticky and put in my office, and it was, what can we do for our caregivers that they don't or can't do for themselves at home? And why can't we do it for them? And that's what I think the whole industry needs to start looking at, is what can we do for them? Because they're the ones that are, they're steering the boat right now, and they're getting through. And what I've seen, the things that I've seen in our campus now, unfortunately, out of our 8 campuses, we have one that has been hard hit from this virus. But, you know, not in a devastating way, but they obviously had some positive cases in there. And the people that have stepped up, it brings me to tears numerous times because what they're doing. I mean, I was talking to Greg and Kim and Kari about let's create a we call them our traveling heroes, and to see who can go in and help inside that campus with the staffing. And before we even put it together, I had 5 people reach out to me to volunteer. Hey, is there any way I can go work there? Can I go into a building that has positive situations? I want to do it. And so right now we have 6 young people who left their homes. One has children. She sent her children to her grandparents, to their grandparents. The rest of them left their homes, came down. They're staying in a hotel in Abingdon. And they're working 60, 80, 100 hours a week inside of that campus now, knowing that they can't go back to their other campus. They're there for 1 to 2 months just because they felt a calling to do it, to be a caregiver there, and because they were dealing with so much. That's what makes me get up in the morning. It makes me proud.
That is just incredible, and I'm starting to develop a habit on the podcast to call out previous guests. And Anastasia Valentina is a nurse that she was part of a Maryland Association of Student Nurses or what have you that hired me to speak years ago, and we stayed in touch. And she's an intensive care unit nurse. Her episode actually is live as we speak. It just went up on Friday. And she was telling me the story of being an intensive care unit nurse in the D.C. area and, you know, having corona patients come to her and sadly, pass away. And, her work ethic is what I'm trying to get to, is legendary, yet I keep hearing everybody say these young caregivers don't have the same work ethic. That is just patently not true. But our industry, save operators like you, often does some things that betrays that loyalty and commitment. You know, we manage our HPPD so tightly that people can't count on their paycheck being the same. We don't extend some of the niceties of education or time off that we really could and should and hopefully will going forward. And if she's so busy right now, Lori Porter, who is the co-founder of the National Association of Healthcare Assistants, is going to come on as a guest. But she's I'm not sure if you're familiar with her. We'll have to get her to come to one of your conferences. But she's just such an advocate. She used to talk about, you know, you're going to spend your money on a gallon of something. Is it going to be milk or gas? Are you going to buy gas to get to work, or are you going to buy milk for your family? And if you don't buy the gas, you'll never buy the milk. And you hit the nail on the head. The avatar is 30 to 35-year-old single mother, and the fact that you, at your size, have figured out how to open up some, daycares and create that kind of an environment for people to go there and fulfill their destiny and passion, what an amazing win-win that you've created.
Yeah. And I think you really opened my eyes to the differences of these different age groups over the past years. And it's, I agree with you that they're not a lazy group of, you've just, they're wound up differently. They want to, the younger generations, they want something to believe in and they want a mission. And this is a perfect industry, but then you've got to recognize them and you've got to meet their basic needs. I think something I heard recently too is culture and having people be a part of something. The first thing you've got to do is make them feel safe. And if you hit the nail on the head there when you said if they can't trust what their paycheck's going to be, or they're going to have to decide whether it's milk or gas, or who's going to watch their kid because they're going to work a night shift, or they're going to leave their kid at home or alone, or these are real world decisions they're making, and they don't feel safe in some of these things. And if we can take care of those, if we can help them plan for their retirement, if we can let them know if you're in a car accident or, you or your kid gets really sick, it's not going to bankrupt you. They've got to feel safe, and I just don't think we are 100% making them feel safe. And even with the other stuff we do, we recognize on birthdays and we recognize on anniversaries, and we believe in that, and those are great things, but you got to do some of this groundwork first. And then let them know, hey, we're here for you just as much as you're here for our residents. And we've got to do better in the industry. And I think the economics in our industry are going to change because of this, and they have to. And it's got to be less going towards buildings and buying buildings and returns and all those things have to happen. But we need to take some of that money and put it towards payroll. And the payroll budgets need to go up. I don't see any, we've all given temporary, I would love for our partners in our industry to figure out ways to give the operators more money so they can make these changes in payroll permanent.
Yeah. So many directions there. You hearken back to me waking you up about generations, what have you. I hardly think that, but I did enjoy the when generations collide, respect your others talk that I used to give, not just because it was so much fun, but because it forced me to do more research and gain a greater appreciation. And I am a huge champion of the millennials, the Generation Y that everybody likes to dump on, kind of as a joke. That's starting to change, but they are very much visionaries, and they will work tirelessly for something they believe in. My true specialty isn't generations, it's caregiver personality. And the thing about the caregiver personality, you've figured out, and many others haven't, they will lay down, I don't want to go anywhere with that analogy, but they will take great risks and make great commitment if they're in an organization that they believe in. If an organization is mission-driven, but behaves differently, if they have a mission statement, but they don't honor it in their actions, these folks will just work there temporarily to get a paycheck, and they'll work other places. And one of the great risks we have in the industry right now with the virus is people are working so many different places because they've not yet found that home where they feel safe, where they feel as though the mission is being honored properly. And I think it's a wake-up call for all of us. And I'm proud to know an operator like you that is still of the right size to think that way and be able to act that way. And I'm also proud, Mike, that at no time do I feel like this is some kind of a commercial. We're talking about something we're passionate about.
Yeah, and you hit the, and you said, I was getting ready to say boom right when you said that. These caregivers that have to work three places, that's a big problem right now for this epidemic. But it's always been a problem for them because you just said it. no one's meeting their needs 100%. And why can't we? Why can't we make it? You know, they should be able to work 40 to 50 hours a week and make a living and not have to work 80 hours in three different places.
Yeah, and I've had people complain to me over the years that there's no loyalty. They'll leave for a 10-cent raise. And I'm like, yeah, and they'll stay for 10 cents less if you make it the worthwhile for them to stay, if you make them feel welcome, if you make them feel like they're a part of the big picture, if they know that, you know, if your occupancy drops, then they're going to be able to spend time on education or doing something else instead of, you know, going home and wondering when, you know, the occupancy is going to bounce back up to where they can work those extra hours that they're used to working. I'm not stopping the podcast, but I want to give you an opportunity, if you'd like, to take a stab at a "you might be a caregiver if" statement that sums up your beliefs or your business or just anything. Do you want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate that. I would say my belief is you might be a caregiver if you have put the future and the needs of someone else ahead of yourself at any time in your life.
Yeah.
And that's probably just about, I would hope, everyone listening, you just don't even realize you're doing it. Whether it's family, friends, and this thing we have right now, somebody you don't even know that needs help. I think it's very prevalent right now. And I've always been a believer, the more you can do for others, and it's maybe even a selfish belief. I've always believed the more I can do for other people, the more I'll get in return. I don't think, what can I get out of this? I think, how can I lift other people up? And that's, you know, all of our caregivers and, you know, our administrators. We have eight campus administrators, EDs. You know, I don't know what everyone calls them differently now. We call them our CEOs of our campuses. They all work truly, and you know this from experience, you work 24/7 for your community and your campus. And I try to do everything I can to improve their lives more and more and more so they can improve the lives of everyone in the campus. But that's how I feel, the only way that I, that my life gets better. And I feel that come back to me. And I think that's pretty much the law of the universe is helping other people. I always say, go back to what John and Paul said, and not the apostles, but the Beatles, all you need is love. And, that's it right now more than ever. And, it's what we all got to do. And it's what I'm trying to do. And Lon, it's what you're saying on this podcast and what people that come on here are sharing. It's love for other people, and it's more important now than ever.
Yeah, and I don't know when and where we get back to, and I'm doing the finger quotes normal, but I think there's going to be great opportunity and great challenges for people like you and other operators, because there are some operators that they're going to come out of this and say, I've had enough. There's other people that are going to say, I'll step in and help. I don't know if you've been having those conversations yet within yourself. I'm sure not, because you're just getting through it now. But, there is going to come a time where the truly mission driven operators, I think, are going to be given great opportunity going forward. And, I'm just impressed with, I mean, you're driving, 4 hours, round trip on Easter to show your people how important they are. And, I hope you don't, I know you just take that for granted. It's what you do, but I don't take it for granted. It's very impressive that you are doing that. And I know your people feel it and appreciate it.
I appreciate that, Lon. And that's, we do see that. I think there's going to be opportunities. I worry about a lot of the other operators that we know. And, I know there were some. The ironic thing is we were ahead of this, and it was blind luck a little bit. We were having such a great flu season that we wanted to step it up and end on a high note. So we jumped on this early, and I know there's a lot of people that didn't, but it was ironic that we got hit at one of our campuses that was just one of the first to shut down and does an amazing job, so you never know. But there are going to be, when we get through this, opportunities, and we do want to grow, but not, Steve and I said, we're not going to grow past the point, you know, we don't get to know every caregiver now personally one-on-one, and that's a hard thing too, but we're never going to get so big that we don't know our management teams personally and like their family. And I think, you know, maybe 20 communities, that would be the most, where if we said if we can't be in those communities multiple times a month and we don't know the leaders by, you know, like their family and talk to them all the time, then we would be too big. But, you know, that's, you know, we see exactly what you're saying is there's going to be some consolidation, but a lot of opportunity because our industry is going to be more important than ever, and it's just getting bigger and bigger. And it's going to change a little bit, but it's still going to come back to one simple thing is caregivers caring for others. And you can make it complicated all you want, but that's what we do, plain and simple.
Well, as a guy that's been in and around the industry my entire career, I always, you know, had these visions of being an owner-operator, and I thought that my passion would serve me well. And, but I don't know whether it was too scared or the opportunity just didn't come along. I can have all kinds of excuses, you know, single dad, whatever. But I never stepped into it the way that you and Steve did, and I'm glad that you guys did, and I'm still not sure whether I'm glad that I didn't, but it takes a special person to manage a tough business and to do it with compassion and with heart. What advice would you give, not necessarily somebody wanting to step into the industry, but just in general to anybody that has a thought about, you know, stepping into the caregiver space or finds himself thrust into it? What advice would you give to those people? If you could go back to your former self, what advice would you give yourself or others?
If I went back and when we were starting, because it's, you know, it was a rocky road. There were a lot of pitfalls and landmines in place, and we hit a couple of them, and some of them were almost, you know, could have ended our company. And, you know, it's, you know, you gotta do it slowly and deliberately and be prepared for those pitfalls and landmines. But I think the biggest thing that I've been saying recently is, in my communications about English Meadows and to all of our caregivers is I've always been told not to mix family and business. And I'm glad I never listened to that. Because that's the thing that has saved us now and what we're going through and has saved us many times before. Because it is, you know, we've had pitfalls, we've got in sticky, you know, financial situations, regulatory, you know, we just, you know, good intentions, but sometimes things happen and you get a bad egg in the bunch that does something wrong or you do the bootstrapping thing that Steve and I love to do and you were talking about, but you know, and something sneaks on up to you. And I'll give you a prime example. At the end of we do update calls every day at 3 o'clock with our management team, every day, weekends included. And I decided a couple weeks ago at the end of those calls, we're going to end on a high note and I'm going to pick somebody on that call and talk about them and give thanks for them. And so we end all of our calls like that. Well, one in particular I told about, you know, right now we're in great shape and we're a large company now and moving forward. But back in the day, it was rocky. There were rocky times, and there was one time in particular that it was payday. We had a new bank. We had a new payroll processor, and we didn't have the funds to make that payday because we had grown a little too fast and we just had a, you know, short-term cash flow situation. And without asking, one of the people that works in the office who's family, they're not just an employee or a coworker, they're family, and you know her, she, without asking, went to the bank and took her savings and put it in there and covered that shortfall in the payroll. And, you know, wow. So that's what I say it's personal to me, it's family to me, and that's what's going to get you through is being genuine and caring about other people and treating them like family, the residents, the staff. You know, Steve and I have probably been a little too generous. That might not be the best word, but over the years, you know, we still charge. We don't do levels of care. We do some very great rates compared to our competitors. And the last time we checked, we were on average about $750 to $1,000 less than our average competitor in the industry. And that, when you have 500 people, that's a lot you're leaving on the table every month. So we have short, very thin margins, but we try to do what's right, and maybe we go overboard. You know, we make deals with people. We let people, you know, accounts, you know, pile up or their balances, and if they have a situation, they're having to sell a home. So we try to give, and I think that ends up coming back to us. And just like that person that we is our family, not just a coworker that did that for us, and without us asking, and which we never would have thought of asking. That's what can happen for you, and that's the reason we're still in business now, and where we are is because of people like her and people, you know, going out of our way to help us when we were in times of need. Because you're going to have those. It's not a straight line up. It's up and down, which life is. But business, I always think a business is a living, breathing thing of its own, and you got to take care of it and nurture it because it's, you know, it's a teenager and then it's a young adult, and you know, it does all those crazy ups and downs like we do. So,
yeah. Well, that's an amazing answer, and that's an amazing story. And to touch briefly on the I've said it before, simplicity. I think that your business model, not just because it might put you in a position of being a lower cost provider in the marketplace, but because it's a more straightforward relationship. There's not this constant discussion that feels like it's a, you know, an upcharge or an opportunistic thing, like your mom or dad had this small decline, therefore it's going to cost more money this month, and it creates a lot of doubt and confusion in the relationship, and you eliminate all of that because of your business model. And I remember seeing you somewhere, I don't know whether it was Facebook or what have you, saying the comment about, you know, keep business and family separate. I'm glad I never followed that advice, and I'd forgotten until you just said it now, so I'm so happy that's what you chose to share. It speaks volumes about you and why your company has grown. Do something self-promoting. Tell us where we can find out more about your company.
Well, we keep that pretty simple too. I go online and go to weloveourresidents.com. Weloveourresidents.com, and you can check out everything about English Meadows.
Yeah. Well, this has been a great way to spend Easter morning. And Mike Williams, you might be a caregiver. Thank you for caring.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate the time and your friendship, Lon. And I hope I really, really hope I get to see you sometime soon.
We'll do that.
Okay, folks, there you have it. Another episode of the podcast. We all have unique caregiver stories, and I hope you're enjoying hearing some of them here on the podcast. I know I enjoyed my Easter morning conversation with Mike, and particularly his lesson or advice to go back to his younger self or to speak to anybody else that might want to step into the role or responsibility of being a caregiver or starting a company or what have you. And I liked how he described the, you know, never mix business with pleasure or never, you know, keep family and work separate, what have you, because he's truly built. I mean, I know his people. I've been in his corporate office. I've been at his conference. They call me to coordinate speaking slots and what have you. And it's really a family. It's really got a culture that is, you know, they can call each other out on their BS, so to speak. They can support one another when they're down. And it's hard to reproduce, but it's very powerful and very impactful. I'd never heard the story that he told me about, you know, payroll and that sort of thing. And it takes a rare breed to be successful in this industry of caring for others. And I really enjoyed learning more about the story. Thanks again for listening. Please leave us a 5-star review because it really helps people find out about the podcast. We're kind of an odd podcast here in that we don't have a specific type of story that we're telling. We're all over the place. We're all caregivers in some way, shape, or fashion, or have had a caregiver touch our lives. And I'm learning a lot, and I hope you are benefiting from these stories and from the podcast. Please tell others about us and go out there, do what you do, be good, and most of all, honor yourself as you care for others, because you might be a caregiver. Thank you for caring. Bye-bye now.